on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step.
Alcoholic member of this group, my name is Guy.
Hi, Guy.
All right, this is Best Jokes from AA Grapevine. I like this one. This sounds like an alcoholic. The parking god. An alcoholic was late to his court appearance, and he was circling the courthouse, desperately looking for a parking spot. Finally, out of desperation, he looks up and said, "God, please find me a spot to park, and I swear I'll never drink again." Right then, someone pulled out right in front of him, and he happily parked. The guy got out and looked up and said, "Never mind, I found one myself." You know. Come on, guys, give me a little.
All right, welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Our Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group. To prepare for our Big Book Study, let's get focused by having a 3-minute meditation followed by the Foglight Prayer.
Good evening, everyone. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and my name is Jay.
Hey, Jay. And I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Ryan.
Hey, Ryan. Hey. Thanks for joining us tonight. We're going to start the meditation in a minute, so please take a moment to get situated.
Please turn off all devices that make noise or will distract others for the duration of the meeting.
The coffee area will be open for this portion of the meeting. Just try to minimize the distractions.
Also, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down.
For the meditation, some suggestions are focus on your breath and posture, breathe in God, and breathe out self.
Take this time to get reconnected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the study. We're going to go ahead and turn down the lights. We're going to bring in the monks, and we'll see you all in 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Foggly prayer. If you don't know what those cards on the table, you can just follow along.
God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me.
Amen. And now we're going to have Don come up and do our secretary's report. Let's welcome up Don.
Good evening, those who are watching on Zoom for the first time. My name is Don, and I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. 'Tis a season to give freely. All right, I've asked Matt to read the recovered statement. Matt, we read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. There you go, man.
Recovered. My name's Matt, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen. Amen.
We are recovered, not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thanks, Matt. All right, 1940-style big book sponsorship from Forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. All right, what we've seen felt, come to believe, and experience is God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. You can't get any better than that, man. We have CDs, mugs, large print, big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Monday promptly at 7:15 p.m., and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the Road to Recovery tune. See you guys next week.
The forward to the first edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have Alcoholics Anonymous for more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book and of this group.
From there is a solution, also from the big book. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism.
This is an open meeting, and as such, all who have an interest in alcoholism and our program of recovery are welcome. Because this is an open meeting, you need not identify yourself nor your reason for being here if you do not wish to do so. Your anonymity will be protected. We ask that you protect ours.
Do we have anyone joining us for the first time? Hey.
Josh, welcome.
Hi, Catherine.
Welcome.
My name is Matt, I'm an alcoholic.
Matt, welcome. All right. Show of hands of recovered alcoholics. All right, if your hand's not up, we suggest you hang out with those who are.
While this is an open meeting, membership in this group is limited to those who wish to recover from alcoholism and have a desire to stop drinking for good and all. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is a potential sponsor of a new member and should clearly recognize the obligations and duties of such a responsibility.
And if you need a big book for the big book study, we do have loaners at the end of the table, but it looks like everyone is secured.
So before we begin our study of the big book, last week we reviewed Tradition 3. Tonight, let's take a quick review of Tradition 4. Please refer to the Unabridged Big Book, page 562, and the Abridged Big Book, page 177. John's going to come up, and he'll read the short form and the long form, and then talk about his experience with Tradition 4.
Okay. All right, John.
Hello, everybody. My name is John. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, John.
First, I just want to address a couple of things. And, Mike, I want to keep your family in prayer, your mom. And I'd like to keep the families in prayer today over that mass shooting up in Madison. And it was just, it's awful. I'm feeling it. I'm carrying it around with me. I've got a beautiful 9-year-old grandson, and I have no idea what that must feel like, but the idea of losing him really affects me. So we're here to discuss Tradition 4, which states, every group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other A groups or AA as a whole. And the long form of that is, respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of the neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect the AA as a whole without conferring the trustees of General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. Now, I looked up autonomous, and it derives from a Greek word that means self-governing. So each group is kind of self-governing. We can start our meetings, end our meetings at different times. We can say a prayer in the beginning, a prayer at the end. But what we can't do is we can't alter the content of what we're doing here, because it'll affect AA as a whole. Autonomous is self-governing, so it gives us the responsibility to act accordingly for the good of AA. But we can do whatever we want within the group as long as we stay within those parameters. And that's all I got on Tradition 4. Thank you.
All right, thank you, John. In order to help Jay stay focused as we study the big book, we use the big book study guide prepared by Joe and Charlie and Krusty Cliff of the Dallas Primary Purpose Group.
Tonight, we're going to begin on page 24, which will be read from the front by tonight's reader, Grant. Grant.
After the page is read, we're going to ask questions from the podium starting on page 24. The answers will be one sentence unless otherwise specified, and multi-part questions are simply a one-sentence answer split up by commas, semicolons, hyphens, and other fun bits of punctuation.
Basically, in English, what that means is that we're going to read the material once through and then redissect the information a second time through the question and answer format. Notice how the language in the questions gives us a new light in which to consider the study material.
This is important because hearing the question and rereading the content offers a definite way of comprehending the material covered. After we've completed the page, we open up for comments, questions, and observations based on what was just read. If you have spiritual experiences with this information, you're free to share.
However, big book study is not therapy. Should you begin sharing about topics which are more appropriately discussed in a different IE sponsorship setting, please do not be offended when Grant cuts that conversation short. For that purpose, we have fellowship meetings before and after our study time.
You can never go wrong by commenting on the page. Which brings us to the words of one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of any Alcoholics Anonymous group. So we didn't just decide to start on page 24 today. We've been reading for a couple weeks now. We started back in the beginning at the preface and the forewords, where we learned a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous and how it became what it is today. If you're planning on joining an organization for the rest of your life, it's kind of important to know a little information about that organization. Then we jumped into the doctor's opinion, where we learned that this is a threefold disease. It's a spiritual malady, it's a physical allergy, and it's a mental obsession. And Dr. Silkworth goes into a lot of detail about the physical allergy that we're dealing with, that phenomenon of craving. Now that we know what alcoholism is, we jump into Bill's story, where we get to see what alcoholism looks like. We might not relate to everything that Bill talks about in the story. You know, I didn't work on Wall Street or go to war. or go play golf for a month. But when he starts talking about the progression of his disease, that I can get on board with, that I understand, and that I can see myself. Once we're done with Bill's story and we know what alcoholism looks like, it's time to start talking about a solution to the problem. So that brings us to the chapter that we're in tonight. There is a solution. So far in this, we've talked a little bit about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and how important it is, but how it's not the program of action. We've been talking about the program of action lately and that mental obsession we've been diving into a little bit more. And we ended last week by talking about how untreated alcoholics, no matter what they do, if they're untreated, they're going to drink. So let's start to read tonight on page 23. We'll pick up on the bottom of page 23 just to recap a little bit. So that's the tragic truth, Grant. Whenever you're ready, go ahead and start, and we'll cut you off.
The tragic truth?
Okay. The tragic truth is that if the man be a real alcoholic, the happy day may not arrive. He has lost control. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reason yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink.
So this is where our questions are
going to pick up. Okay. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily planted, with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, "It won't burn me this time, so here's how." Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. How often have some of us began to drink in this nonchalant way after the third or fourth pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, "For God's sakes, how did I ever get started again?" Only to have thought supplanted by, "Well, I'll stop with the sixth drink," or, "What's the use anyhow?" When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid, and unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop but cannot. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching and leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for successful consumption. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this, and nothing less. We have a deep and effective spiritual experience, which...
We're going to stop there for a second.
Okay.
There's a little asterisk in the book. That asterisk, if you look at the bottom of the page, says this: what he's talking about right now is going to be fully explained in Appendix 2. So we're going to flip back to page 183 in the abridged books and page 567 in the unabridged. And Grant, you can go ahead and read spiritual experience for us.
183? 567.
You said what?
I don't know. It's 567.
Looks like this. It's all the way in the back.
Oh, okay. Hmm. the past a vision for you?
Yes.
Okay. The last two pages all the way to the back.
All right, gotcha, gotcha.
Sorry.
No worries.
Hold your place, though, because we're going to flip right back to where we left off after this.
What is a spiritual experience? The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experience must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happy for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the fact, a few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it is not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Many of our experiences are what the psychologist William James called the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life.
Read that again. Read that.
He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. That such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline, with few exceptions. Our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves, God. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he has not closed his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
All right, Herbert awesome. Spencer. So we'll go back to page 27, and you can keep on reading from where we stopped.
25, right?
25.
Page 25.
Okay. Why did we just read that?
What?
Why did we just read that?
To know what a spiritual experience is.
Just
start from the beginning of that paragraph.
The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experience, which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is that the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. If you are as seriously as alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had both two alternatives. One was to go to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help. This we did because we honestly wanted to, and we were willing to make it the effort.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and stop there. We'll pick up the questions at the middle of page 24.
All right. Ready?
Yep.
All right. With no more than a glass of beer, what does not enter our mind?
The almost.
Oh. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us.
If there is a slight suspicion, what does the mind do?
If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people.
What analogy do they give us here regarding the loss of power of choice?
There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
What may the alcoholic say to himself?
The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, "It won't burn me this time, so here's how." Or perhaps he doesn't think at all.
Do alcoholics always give some thought to taking a drink?
How often has some of us began to drink in this nonchalant way, and after the third or fourth, pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, "For God's sakes, how did I ever get started again?"
Three-part question. Do some alcoholics start drinking without realizing what they are doing? And, sorry, four-part question? Do some alcoholics start drinking without realizing what they are doing? When they realize they are drinking, what thought or thoughts do they have? Rest of paragraph.
Only to have that thought supplanted by, "Well, I'll stop with the sixth drink," or "What's the use anyhow?" When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid.
If not locked up, what will happen to them?
And unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. These stark and...
Is this fact or fiction?
These stark, ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history.
Do we want to stop there? Wait, where am I? Wow. This book is confusing. What has prevented many such demonstrations?
But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations.
What are so many unable to do?
So many want to stop but cannot.
All right, so we'll stop. Anything that anybody has to say? Who can relate to these moments of, you know, starting to drink and not even remembering the reasons why you started to drink? You know, but then once you start, you might as well just keep going. Got a hand up over here.
In other words, you know, it won't burn me this time.
Not exactly the words I use, but similar, you know, idea. That pretty much starts with how every relapse for me had started. Just like, this time I got it. I'll be able to control it somehow this time. It just seems like a casual start to before, you know, we talked before, like the downward spiral that happens. But it is just so easy for me to convince myself, this time, mm-hmm. after a couple months clean or a year clean, I got it. And just so easily I can put that little seed in my head that everything's going to be okay this time. That's all I got.
Thanks, Kenneth.
Yeah, for me, Jay Alcoholic.
Hey, Jay.
It just boils down to, like, it just like puts me, when I read this kind of stuff, it puts me back in that place where I just had no choice in the matter. I had no power against it, you know? Whether or not I said I wasn't going to do it, like, it would still happen. And I would end up in certain situations, you know, like, I wasn't pounding on the bar, per se, but I kind of get what they're getting at, you know. I would wake up in a jail cell and be like, how did I end up here again? You know, like, I said I wasn't going to do this, and then I did it. Like, where is my willpower at? You know, I could stay up all night, sleep for 30 minutes, and go to work the next day. But when it came to, like, when it came to alcohol, I had no power, you know, and we have to find that somewhere. And I think that's what this chapter is going to be about.
Yep. Real quick, I just want to go back to the paragraph that we read last week. We did the questions on it, but it's the untreated fact box. Why untreated alcoholics drink? The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. I remember what it does for me, but I don't remember what it does to me.
Mm. Got a hand up.
Alcoholic Mike Chase.
Hi, Mike Chase.
So I try to put myself in the different phases of my drinking career. You know, junior high and high school, it was the weekend warrior, and it was definitely let's go out and get wasted. Let's get shit-faced. This is what it was all about. It wasn't like little smart cocktails, you know, before the football game. It was like I'd take a cough medicine bottle and take a little bit of everything off my mom's bar. So I just had the suicide and stuff. And I had no, so by the time I moved out to go to college, and I was literally without adult supervision, and I had no boundaries on what I could drink. It was college. That's what you do. You go to the Rathskeller, and then you drink at night. And some people actually go to classes and stuff like that. So when it finally started back in 2004 and 5, when I was, you know, attempting to get sober, and even before that, my intention was always go out, Bistro Las Solas, have just a couple of Knob Creeks, a couple of bumps in the bathroom so I could be chatty with everybody, be in bed at home by 9:30 for that 6 o'clock meeting down in Miami. And I always went into that thinking positively, this is going to happen. I'm going to get there. And then as I'm getting ready to leave, someone walks into the bar and says, oh, got it. Boop. And let's have a drink and stuff like that. Because the phenomenon has kicked in. But I really, it wasn't until like 2006 that I started to realize that I had no control once I started drinking, or that I couldn't start. Because I had set it up such a way that I would have a good, successful week of going to meetings and IOP. So I would celebrate by having some bump and some tequila and rewire my sound system on Friday and be able to show up to the dry dock on Monday and pretend I didn't get drunk. Well, Tuesday, Wednesday rolls around and I come back smelling like a thing. And I wasn't getting a connection because I literally thought I was choosing to do that. I was having so much fun. I was challenged. I really enjoyed this thing, you know? Because I wasn't an alcoholic because I had a job, I had a car, I had a house, I had no consequences. This was just a fun lifestyle of drinking I had taken on. It wasn't until I realized that, you know, I had this stack of reasons why I shouldn't drink, but I still drank. And this is where that insanity comes through. I touched a barbecue once and burned the heck out of my hand, and I never did that again. But as, ironically, as a little kid, I'd always like wet my finger a little bit and touch it anyways just to test myself. But, you know, if I looked at everything that alcohol had caused me, I would never touch it. My parents, you know, a normal person wouldn't touch it. So the mental obsession had finally kicked in, and I had no control whatsoever on once I start. But the scary part was I could not come up with a good enough reason not to drink. I'd go out, I'm not going to drink, and then I got a drink in front of me. How'd this happen? Or somebody says to me, I was in IOP and I was out playing pool and somebody shot me over a thing of schnapps, and without even thinking I shot it down. Oh shit, I'm in IOP. Well, may as well get really good and drunk, you know. I've had people in halfway houses, they accidentally get a shot out of the, you know, it's like, what's their thought process? Well, I'm already getting kicked out of IOP for a Chardonnay and spritz. No, I'm going to get me some 8-Balls. I'm going big time, you know? So that's the insanity of this stuff. It sets us apart from normal people.
Anybody else?
Owie?
What? I burnt myself. Anybody else? burnt myself on a hot stove. You want to keep going?
Yeah. Is there a solution?
There is a solution.
Three-part question. One sentence. Does the alcoholic like the solution? What do they not like? And are these actions necessary for success in sobriety?
Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for successful consumption.
What gave us hope and what were we faced with when confronted by recovered alcoholics?
But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it.
All right, and then this is going to be two sentences. For those of us who have adopted the simple kit of spiritual tools as a way of life, what have we experienced?
When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid out at our feet. We have found that much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence from which we had not even dreamed.
What is the great fact for us?
The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have a deep and effective spiritual experience, which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe.
Going to be questions for spiritual experience.
Okay.
So we're going to flip back and forth.
Okay. Do you have the questions?
You have them. So just pick up the questions where we left off. We'll do that first paragraph, and then we'll start the second paragraph. But in the book, it'll tell you to go to spiritual experience.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
It says read footnote.
Yes.
What's a footnote?
The thing at the bottom.
Oh. $5.69.
So you're going to start at that first paragraph, though. You don't have to worry about it until the next paragraph.
Wait, what?
No.
Ryan, help me.
Take my book.
Okay.
I don't know where you left off.
I'm
so
over
you're
going
to do, is there a solution? When you get to this, it's going to say spiritual experience. You're going to skip to spiritual experience. All right, let's go.
So what is the great fact for us?
No. We didn't do the questions for the paragraph before that.
Yeah, we did.
No, there is a solution?
Yeah, we did that.
We did the question and answers for it?
Yeah. Yeah, we're here. So now what? So now go back here?
Oh, yeah, let's open it up for questions. Anybody have any comments? Got John.
My name is John, recovered alcoholic.
Hey, John.
And like Mike, my first year at Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I was drinking. I would go out on the weekends. I never thought I had a real alcohol problem. But, you know, I proved myself wrong and over and over and over again, no matter what I told myself. You know, I was going to Flanagan's for this famous hamburger that they had there, and I would go to Shenanigans to see some other friends of mine while in AA. And, you know, I flirted with the idea of drinking, and I did drink. You know, you go to the places like that.
But I didn't want to go back to the bar, so I kept going forward with the steps. And sometime during that process, that desire
me to go out and get loaded on the weekend, or go to Flanagan's for this famous cheeseburger, or whatever it was, I used to tell myself, you know, relax. And that's what actually started my journey. Looking back now, you know, like Stevie said, this was a shill game for me. I came in to stop using other things other than alcohol, and alcohol. I had a desire to stop. Just once I started, I couldn't stop. And that would lead me to other things. But this was like a shill game. You know, I came in here to stop my using and then stop drinking. And somewhere in the process, I found a relationship with God that they were going to talk about, and they do talk about it. And, you know, it's been a number of days since then, and I haven't had a drink or anything else at that point, at this point. And, you know, like it says, found much of heaven and been rocketed into a fourth dimension existence, which are not even dreams. And not only am I sober as a result of this program, my kids are sober, my brother's sober, my sister's sober, and it all started with me changing my life. You know, I was an example for others when I was getting loaded. Now I'm an example for others in my family to do this, to be a part of this. This isn't the best thing ever.
Thanks.
Hi, family. My name is Danny.
Hey, Danny.
Addict, alcoholic. My drinking progressed, and I didn't become a real alcoholic until later in life. But once I crossed that Rubicon, and I knew that. Every time I pick up a drink, there's no turning back or anything like that. And it wasn't until, like I said, being locked up, you know, God had to get me alone. And when I had nowhere else to go, and until I developed after that, got into recovery and developed the God consciousness. That was the beginning of my journey. And recognizing that He was with me.
And in my situation, whether I was at JC's and saw the little signs here and there that God was with me, and you know, until I finally went up, you know, I've been up to altar calls before and walked up with my tail between my legs, but you know, the last time I just knew it. I just knew that it was finished, and drinking was something in the past for me. And I went up in victory, and that was a big difference for me. And that's all I got.
Thanks, Danny.
Almost not less than self-searching, let alone our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which this process requires for its successful consummation. It's a good thing that I read this with my sponsor before I got to this part, because I know what he's talking about now. He was convinced of the need for moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and the necessity of belief in and dependence upon God. Anybody else have anything they want to share? Hey, Grant.
So my spiritual experience was like drinking and using. Like when... I was drinking and using since I was like 15. So like my life kind of revolved around that. Like everything I did, I had to be like messed up for, or like for job interviews, I had to be like drunk before them. And because I was so anxious and like so caught up in my head that I couldn't like deal with life really. And like working these steps and like getting all the way through the steps and then taking other people through the steps, that's like really cool to see. Because like you're not thinking about yourself 24/7 and you're thinking about somebody else and how can I help them, you know, begin this process and do the same thing as me. And I think when I see somebody like complete the steps, I think that's just very cool, and you see them get better and better. And yeah, I think that's like my main spiritual experience I've experienced so far in AA. But yeah, that's all I got. Thanks.
Anybody else have anything they want to share? All right, we're going to jump into the questions, but the questions are going to pick up now in spiritual experience. So page 183 in the abridged version and 567 in the unabridged.
All right, let's do this.
Yeah, it's tricky tonight. It's tricky tonight.
That's okay. Let's wait for Mike Chase. Of course. Upon careful reading, what do we learn is the product of a spiritual experience and spiritual awakening?
The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms.
And I have a comment for that paragraph, and it says, please note the words careful reading. Some alcoholics will not recover because they will not carefully read this basic text for Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, next paragraph. What impression did the readers of the first printing of the first edition get?
Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals.
This conclusion is what?
Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous.
And then I have a comment for that paragraph, which is, the only significant change that has been made in the basic text, the first 164 pages, plus the doctor's opinion of the big book, is the one that produced the need for Appendix 2. Step 12 in the first printing read, having had a spiritual experience as the result of this course of action. In reading Bill's story, we read where he had a sudden spiritual experience as the result of these steps. Dr. Bob, on the other hand, had a very slowly developed spiritual awakening. Many of those reading the first printing of the big book were not experiencing Bill's hot flash and felt like they were missing something. To correct that misconception, Bill reworded step 12 to what it now reads and added Appendix 2 as an explanation. Next paragraph. In the stories in the first chapters, which spiritual event was described?
In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described.
Did most alcoholics believe that they too must have a spiritual experience?
Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook.
Are such transformations frequent?
Among our rapidly growing membership... Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule.
All right. What do most of our members experience, and why did William James call them that?
Most of our members' experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time.
Very often, who are the first to notice the change that has taken place?
Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself.
What does the alcoholic finally realize, and could he have accomplished this himself?
He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound altercation in his reaction to life.
Continue.
That such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone.
What could seldom have been accomplished by self-discipline?
What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline.
And then this is the last question I have. With few exceptions, what do we all tap into?
With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected...
Oh, never mind. I have more questions. Go ahead.
Inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves.
What do they identify this to be?
Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. our more religious members call it God consciousness.
I don't know if this is this right. Are these questions right?
Yeah.
What do most of us think?
Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts.
What will defeat an alcoholic?
He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial.
What is it that no one should have difficulty with?
We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program.
What are the essentials of recovery?
Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable.
How important are they?
Indispensable.
Oh, indispensable.
What will keep a person in everlasting ignorance?
There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
All right, so we're going to go back to page 25 and just read that question again. What is the great fact for us? And then keep going to the end of that paragraph.
What is the great fact for us?
The central fact of our lives today.
No, the great fact.
Oh.
Right here.
Yeah, it's right there. Right here. Oh. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe.
What is the central fact in our lives today?
The central fact of our lives today is that the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous.
What has He commenced doing?
He has commenced to accomplish those things for us, which we could not do by ourselves.
All right, we're going to go ahead and stop there, and we're going to open all of that up for comments.
I have a comment in the book, or like a note in the book that says, is this a self-help program?
No.
There's no answer, it's just a question.
Recovered alcoholic Mike Chase.
Hi, Mike Chase.
Yeah, I spent a decade and a half not knowing what the main purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous was. I thought it was a social event. I thought it was fellowship recovery. I thought it was just, you know, doing everything but just don't pick up no matter what. I had the luck of having a white light experience while in Hazleton in 84, and then I just rode that white light until I pretty much burned the light out after 15 years. It wasn't until I actually read it, this part of the book, that I started to understand what the whole purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous is. To clear away the wreckage of my past and develop a new relationship with a higher power that I should have had all along. And the specifics that they taught me, the central fact of my life today is the absolute certainty that the Creator has entered into my heart and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. I literally was a lying, cheating, stealing, low-life, self-centered, inconsiderate, backstabbing creep. And through the process of going through the steps correctly, I'm a much better person. And I know what this whole thing's about. Having a relationship with God. Good news. This is about getting a relationship with God. Bad news. It's about having a relationship with God. And if you don't want to have a relationship with God, well, we've got straight recovery, all these other different programs out there to help you quit drinking that doesn't involve God. But Alcoholics Anonymous is a God-based, spiritual-based, not religion. Remember when they did this? This was an old, you know, Oxford group was like really fundamentalist Christian, and the book came around and opened it up to a lot of different conceptions. So, yeah, I to know what this is about, I'm glad you guys read the spiritual experience because that's what this is all about. If you don't know what this is about, what are you doing here, right?
Anybody else? I like that in that whole part that we read about spiritual experience, how many different ways they go about saying spiritual experience or just changing, right? And one of the ways that they talked about it earlier in the book was a complete psychic change. That was always the one that kind of stuck out to me when I first came in because it wasn't so much like the spirituality aspect of it for me, but it was more just the change of my thinking. Oh, that guy.
Guy.
Hey, Guy.
I like this spiritual experience. It talks about what often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. And, you know, because we're tackling this on a spiritual basis, I was working on, you know, discipline, I can do this. And, you know, when it came to sports or whatever, or making money, I could do that. But when it came to not taking a drink, none of that worked. None of that worked. And it's amazing that if you surrender to your higher power and do the steps, what takes place. I mean, people who were totally crazy, who couldn't stop drinking, 6 months later are totally different people. Which maybe they'd have to go to treatment for 5 years to get that out of them. But they were able to do that by coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, turning their life over to a higher power, taking it one day at a time, and of course doing the steps, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And I sometimes have to do that in my life when I'm faced with a health issue or a financial issue or something. Sometimes I got to turn it over to my higher power. And without that, you know, I can get myself bent out of shape and totally crazy. But I know there's a spiritual solution today, not only to my alcoholism, but to my other problems in life.
Thanks, Guy.
I'm Jay. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jay.
Hey. This just, for some reason, this reminded me. So I have this, like, buddy that, or, like, old buddy that, you know, I used to get drunk with and party with. And he messages me, like, every so often and asks for money, you know. And he owes me, like, $40. But he messaged me again today. And it was this long-winded message. He was like, hey, can I borrow $60, man? Like, I need to get my medication and some food, man. And it was like this long text. And, you know, it's the holidays, so I just screenshotted my, I didn't have to lie, I screenshotted my Wells Fargo bank account. It was negative 90. Like, hey, I have nothing. I can't help you out, man. You know? But, and then he followed it up with, do you have anybody that can borrow, can you borrow $60 from anybody and then send it to me? And then I was just like, what? You know, but that's like the kind of stuff that I used to do before I had this psychic change. It's funny now, but like when you're in it, you're not thinking about anything but like, I need money for what I need, you know? But it's just crazy because like I saw myself in that text message, you know, and the person that I used to be versus the person that I am today because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is outlined in this book, is... it's just night and day, you know. So, and I have God to thank for that.
Anybody else want to share on anything we read tonight?
Just quick, one last.
You just wanted to make your
experience. Turn that page. That's a good one. And he had to read it twice too. And this is what's, I like this part. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realized that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. Before recovery, before sobriety, my reaction to life was always inappropriate. It was always the wrong thing at the wrong time, the wrong action at the wrong time. And that's the one of the things that's changed. I am appropriate in most aspects of my life now. And that allows me to start to deal with all the other areas in my life. So thanks.
Thanks.
My name's Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Grant.
So, pretty cool thing that happens in AA after a while. So, this girl who I went to school with, she knows I'm sober. Her boyfriend is currently, like, in rehab right now. And he gets out in January. And so, like, she calls me up and, like, is having, like, a breakdown today because he says he wants to, like, go to California or Seattle and live in one of those sober houses or something like that. And I was telling her, and she was, like, asking him what his triggers were, and he was like, and he was like, oh, when I'm bored and have nothing to do. And I was like, that was literally me, which is crazy, because, like, I used to be like, oh, I have nothing to do, you know, like, might as well just get high or drink. Like, that was, like, literally me, like, 2 years ago. And so... I'm hoping to like get in contact with this guy, because this girl's my really good friend, and I just hope like I can help him out, because like I see like all of that stuff, like that was me literally. But yeah, that's all I got.
Thanks, Grant. Should we close?
Anybody else want to share anything before we start to close up?
Going once.
All right.
From A Vision for You, page 164, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but you obviously cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is the great fact for us.
Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny.
So, in this meeting, we give out, we like to celebrate sponsorship and going through the book and stuff like that. So, instead of chips, we have... Is there any sponsors who want to introduce a new sponsee with a sponsorship medallion? And introduce them to the group and get them connected. Oh, we need a medallion.
We need a medallion.
They were serious when I said bring two. Bring two. Two. They were serious.
Here, I'll give you that.
Zach Stone, alcoholic.
Hey, Zach.
Got two really willing guys that I'm working with. I got Josh and I got Kenny, and I'm really grateful that God put them in my life.
So. All right, let's go. All talk to them after the meeting.
Wait, you did it already? Yeah. That was fast.
That's the way to do it.
I missed all of it.
All right. We'll talk to you guys after the meeting and get your number, and let's get you connected.
Anyone celebrating a year or more of sobriety that would like a medallion? Cool. Does anybody need a big book sponsor?
Everybody needs a big book sponsor.
If you would like to become a member of this group, you can see Ryan after the meeting, and he'll take your blood sample.
Can all home group members raise your hands? Awesome. We'll see you after the meeting to help take down the room. We don't have to really move a lot tonight.
Nice.
Is there a meeting next week?
There is no meeting next week on Monday night. No. Yeah, no. No, yeah, meeting. No. There is no meeting.
There's no Monday meeting next week.
Yes.
Is there a Thursday meeting?
Yes.
So Thursday evening is our Alcoholics and God's Step Series workshop starting at 7:15.
In the sanctuary across the street.
In the sanctuary across the street. So it's Stevie B, and he should be on time this time.
Where is the Thursday night meeting? I'm sorry.
It's going to be in the sanctuary across the street. The main sanctuary, yep.
And we could use some help bringing stuff over tonight.
So okay. Please wait till you're 75 feet from the doors to vape or smoke, or if you feel like using the balcony, we'll allow it. We're going to go ahead and close with the Lord's Prayer. Who opened up today?
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. Can't get it right. It doesn't matter.
much accumulation. Yeah. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. Thank you.
this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go.
Thank you. today in a brand new way. Show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms. And here in this moment that we share, nothing could come out.
Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? Oh, say, got one man that just won't say.